Welcome to this special edition of Fearless with Jason Whitlock. I, of course, am Jason Whitlock, your host. We are joined for this discussion by a dear friend right here in the state of Tennessee, Lucas Botkin, founder of T-Rex Arms. You guys have seen the video of me out at their facilities getting my first guns. They hooked me up. I wanted to bring Lucas in studio because, you know, that video was about me and about Lucas and his team teaching me some things about guns use and hooking me up with some guns and some ammo. I think Lucas is so fascinating and T-Rex Arms are so fascinating. I wanted to unpack a bit more of Lucas's story. Many of you maybe already know it. He's very popular on, you know, all the platforms, got a successful YouTube channel and all that other stuff. But for our audience, I wanted to go a little bit more in depth with Lucas and unpack his story because he's going to be a part of Roll Call because we're going to talk about entrepreneurship and the importance of entrepreneurship. And Lucas is one of the best young entrepreneurs in all of America and has built a work environment where you can actually be a Christian. And we need to do more of that. So Lucas Botkin, welcome to Fearless. Glad you drove up and made the trip.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So Lucas, you know, and I know many people know your story, but I do want you to unpack your story for my audience that may be a tiny bit unfamiliar. You're just a kid growing up in Tennessee that has an interest in gun holsters, or walk us through the early stages of T-Rex.
Yeah. So the R-rated story was I was a very lazy young teenage guy here in America, similar to many kids out there these days. And when I was 19, I was starting to get a little older and I was a little nervous. I don't know what I want to do with my life. I'm a volunteer firefighter. I was kind of doing some of that. I was very interested in the medical side, but I still didn't really know what I wanted to do. I didn't have any job aspirations. I wasn't particularly raised in a household that encouraged people to go out and get high paying, you know, big jobs or careers, you know, things like that. So I didn't have a lot of idea for what I should do or what I needed to do. And I started making holsters because I like making stuff. I always liked making stuff. So I was making these little things out of this plastic called Kydex. And my parents said, hey, why don't you sell some on eBay? So because of them, they encouraged me to try to sell some stuff online. So I put like 6 or 8 of them on eBay and they sold. And I went, oh, I can make a thing and people will buy it. That's fascinating. I think that was the first time that it ever happened. And then I immediately went to, well, I'm going to start a company. I'm going to make this a thing. This is maybe going to be my job, and I want to make this happen. So I had about 1,000.
At age 19.
Is that at this point, I was 20. I started dabbling at 19. I was 20 when I started the company. But I started doing market research. I figured out how to get a website built. I had a friend in church who could help me with that. I paid $400 for the theme. I had $1,000 to start. I had some money I inherited from one of my grandparents who passed. I think I had like $2,000 in the bank or something. I didn't know what to do with it. But I ended up spending...
That's a huge inheritance. So this is $2,000. This is where your white privilege probably came.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It all comes in. And then the government probably took probably 40% of it. Probably is what happened. But so I have the $1,000. I go and I get the website started. I get the material. And I use Instagram because I realized that's a platform I can market on. I know it. I've been on it. There's very few gun industry companies on there. So I focused on Instagram, had a little iPod Touch that I would take pictures with. I didn't even have a cell phone at the time. And just started selling stuff. Used PayPal, used a WordPress website. And within, I think it was 3 months, had to hire my first contractor to come help because there was just too much work and I was trying to delegate. And then the company kind of took off about a year and a half after that. We started to get employees. We had a product that other companies didn't have. They didn't have as good of a product, in my opinion, at the time. And so we had something people wanted. We were able to produce it. And then it's kind of blew up from there. So
go back a little further in terms of your parents. Your dad's a minister. Mm-hmm. Were you growing up in Tennessee? Are you living in some palatial estate? And didn't they send you to some Ivy League college?
I mean, yeah, Harvard. No, it's foreign. No, yeah. So my family, I grew up in New Zealand, born in West Virginia. My family moved to New Zealand. My dad did some political stuff, and then he was more involved in the church when we came back to the States. Our family never had money. We never had a lot of money. I never saw money. In fact, we were so frugal that at times that has actually held the company back, some of our frugality in decision making, because we're penny pinchers. We don't want to spend money on certain things that we actually probably should have a few years ago. And so that's actually come back to bite us a little bit, and we're having to learn how to not be frugal at all times in certain cases where we need to buy efficiency. But didn't grow up with money, which I'm thankful for. My wife and I, it's something we talk about all the time. How are we going to raise our kids? Because we have some money now, my wife and I, but how do we raise our kids in a healthy environment around money, around, you know, a strong economy of our household, to a point where they're not going to be spoiled, because I don't want my kids to, you know, be spoiled from having money. So I didn't have money growing up, which I was thankful for.
Can I ask you this? And I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, you're fine.
Just, I want the audience to get a full picture. I think this is important because there are people out there with, they got young kids, or a young person will see this. And so I tell people all the time on this show, me and my dad in 1984 lived in a one bedroom, 400 square foot apartment. My dad probably in 1984, I think made around $15,000. Mm-hmm. And so I share that to try to let kids know, don't get caught up. You don't have to have everything. You just started a business with $1,000. And so I just want a little bit more detail about, you got brothers and sisters. How big is the home you guys are living in? And when you say frugal, it's like, are you guys shopping at Aldi's and cooking a pot of beans and everybody's eating on it for a week?
Yep. Anyway. So I'll put it this way. So I never had my own bedroom growing up. I always shared with two brothers, sometimes three. I have six siblings, so big family. The house we lived in before I moved out was a two bedroom. So my two sisters are in one room, three of us boys are in the other, and then my parents have a room, and that's how big our house was. In the most recent house that I lived in before moving out, we had a 15 passenger van, that was our car. We didn't have a bunch of cars. And how much money my dad made? I mean, he's a minister, and he wasn't paid a salary until...
Don't need that detail.
Yeah, but just wanted to understand. There was no money, you know, not really. And we lived very frugally to the point, I'll tell a story. I remember in New Zealand, I found a $1 coin on the beach. In New Zealand, they have dollar coins, $2 coins. It's fun. And I was probably 10 years old. And I had this coin, and my family, they were like, oh, that's cool. You have a dollar or it's $2. You need to take care of it. What are you going to do with it? Well, I ended up going and buying a soda with it because that's what I wanted. And my family kind of scolded me a little bit for, you know, using my money in not a good way. So that was my experience growing up with money when I was young. And so now I'm having to relearn some things and figure out, you know, how to
use money. Homeschooled as well.
So homeschooled. Yep. Never went to the school system. I don't even have a GED. I've got no degrees. Except for I had a firefighter degree at one point because I had to take the course. And then I have my carry permit. And I think those are the only papers I have.
You told me something interesting, that being homeschooled taught you how to figure things out for yourself.
Yeah. So probably as far as like privilege goes, the privilege that I had living in the house that I lived in was my parents cared enough about us that they wanted to school us themselves. They didn't want to send us to the school system, which back in the 90s and early 2000s definitely wasn't as bad as it is now. Things are definitely very different now than they were back then. But they wanted to homeschool us. They wanted to show us, you know, Dad would worked a lot with my older brothers. There's a 10-year gap, or my two older brothers is 12 years and 10 years older than I. So they actually worked with him in some of the jobs and stuff that he was doing. Now, I didn't get that because I was way younger. But they taught us homeschooling, and the most important thing they pushed was you can teach yourself anything. And so when I was 16 and 17, I was doing pretty much all my schooling on my own. My parents weren't having to do it. I was going and researching the things I was interested in, history. And then when I was 18, I started researching medical because I thought I might want to be a paramedic, but I'm not sure. But that was all research I was doing on my own. I didn't need someone, you know, poking me, telling me, hey, go, you know, work, sit down from 9 to 3 and do your thing. That's just what I wanted to do. And when I started the company, it was the same thing. I'm going to figure out how these websites work. I'm going to figure out how to sell product. I'm going to figure out how to make the product. I'm going to figure out if people even want this product. And I basically had to teach myself economics and how to start a company. I didn't have to go to a school and rely on, I didn't even read, I think the first business book I read was like 3 years ago. I wasn't even reading business books back then. I was just trying to figure it out on my own, which has some pros and cons. But that was probably the most important thing I learned from my parents was, hey, you can teach yourself anything, almost anything. Heart surgery might be different. But you could teach yourself pretty much anything if you have discipline and motivation and you have some initiative and ingenuity in going out and trying to figure it out.
Do you think of yourself, and again, this is, let me phrase it in a way you can answer, but, you know, I'm not going to ask the question properly, but answer it properly.
Yeah, yeah.
Answer it in the spirit that it's at. Do you think of yourself as a genius?
No.
Have you ever had your IQ tested?
Do no. you think? I'm concerned if I did. It might be lower than I would like.
And because I want people to understand, because I, you know, mm-hmm. I graduated high school, I think, with like a 2.8 GPA. I graduated college with a 2.3 GPA. I'm just not very smart as it relates to that.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
But there's a set of values I have
yes.
that work in this society the mm-hmm. way it used to be rigged. Now, they're trying to take that all away, but it's just almost like, if you'll show up on time, if you'll be reliable, if you're in some sort of, and again, you ain't even got to be in the greatest health, look at me, but if you're in healthy enough where you can show up to work every day,
yeah.
Man, the things you can achieve, and if you're willing to avoid these banana peels that they just throw out there, obvious, hey, smoke some drugs or get hooked on, become a drug addict or alcoholic or, you know, lose yourself in pornography. All these banana pills, if you can just avoid them,
oh yeah,
then you have a great shot at accomplishing something great. That's what I see in T-Rex arms in your story.
Well, and it's funny you bring that up because there are times where I step back and I go, my wife and I are currently working on another business that we'd like to start. And I've had to step back and go, okay, am I actually an entrepreneur? Like, can I go and do cereal, like start lots of businesses? Or was T-Rex kind of a lucky, you know, it's the business that I started, it's all I'm gonna ever have, you know? Am I actually a genius at starting businesses? And the funny thing is, I don't think it takes a high amount of intellect to go out and start a company. It really only takes one thing that I feel like our country has been starting to lose, I mean, for the last couple decades, but it's really ramping up with Gen Z, and that is a very low work ethic. Even if you just have a solid work ethic, I want to work, working's good, working's noble, working's needed to build the country, and you work at a McDonald's, you can still work up to a point to be a manager, and you don't have to be the smartest person ever. And then it may transition to, hey, I'm able to run this McDonald's franchise just fine. I now want to go start my own company, or I'm happy doing this management job, maybe transition to managing a larger business. You don't have to have this super high IQ. I don't even know what a high IQ is, 160 or 80, I don't know. I don't even know. You don't need that. All you need is work ethic and the discipline to stick to it, and that is where a lot of people are held down at their jobs, not making a lot of money, not getting raises. Then the taxes go up, the economy gets bad. They have to sell their guns. They can't shoot as much any often. They can't do certain things. And a lot of it stems from lack of work ethic. And I know it's going to upset some people out there, but that's the hard truth is it really comes down to that way more than your intellect, your IQ, or even your upbringing. If you can work hard now, it doesn't really matter who your parents were. I had to move out of the house. I had to do my own thing. A lot of people say, well, you're successful because your parents gave you the business, bought it for you, did whatever. And it's no, I'm successful because I worked very hard and God blessed it. And my parents did do some things for me with my upbringing, which I'm very thankful for, which is privilege, like a privilege. And that's what I hope to do for my children.
Parental privilege. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Something everyone's capable of giving.
Exactly. But after you move out of the home, it is all on you what you do with that. How hard you work, what your plans are, what your objectives are. And so it really, to me, it all comes down to work ethic and what people are willing to put out.
So give me 1 second, because I want to transition back to the success of your company. Mm-hmm. And you know, you kind of left off like, hey, 3 or 4 months, things started taking off and I had to, but give me 1 second, I want to take care of one of our great sponsors, Cozy Earth. Save up to 35% on Cozy Earth loungewear, pajamas, bedding, bath towels, and more. Fall in love with everyday luxury at Cozy Earth. Go to CozyEarth.com and enter my promo code Fearless at checkout for up to 35% off. That's CozyEarth.com, promo code Fearless. Lucas, so we kind of left off with your narrative of after about a year, you guys start having real success. Walk us through the kind of success that you guys, because now you got like 100 employees now. Anyway, walk us through a bit of that journey of moving into success and then what that, how do you handle that as a young person? You're just 30 years old, right?
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. And so this has been a 10-year journey that elevated very quickly.
Yes.
1 year in. So this is a 21, 22-year-old dealing with starting to have money, starting to have people depend on you. How did you handle and manage all of that?
So what was very helpful early on, so this was a year and a half in, I had one of my older brothers working for me, is really what it was, and a friend, and they said, hey, you know, what if we partnered with you and came on board as business partners? And one of them could handle accounting, because I did not want to handle CFO accounting stuff. That is not something I'm that interested in. The other one was much more oriented to the production process, which I had done, but I wanted to get away from and focus on the brand, marketing, and products and stuff. So they came on board and we were able to delegate. So the first piece of advice I would give anyone if they're in this position is delegate as much as you can so you can focus on what you're good at or what you want to do, but really what you're good at. So early on I was able to delegate, so I didn't have to do everything, because that is typically a reason why a lot of businesses aren't able to start up or get successful is the founder or the owner wants to keep their hands in everything and be involved. And there's a limit to what you can do in a day. You can't do it all. And if you need to focus on the vision of the company or the direction of the company or even just the products, you know, the high quality nature of the products or the testing of the products, you can't do everything else. You have to find the right people. So you have to surround yourself with the right people. So I was very fortunate to have some really good people at the church, and people that I knew were able to come in, were able to start working, free me up so I could go and do other things. That was extremely important. Probably the biggest challenge for me was the fame that came with the position, because I am an outspoken individual. We utilize a personality-based marketing model for T-Rex Arms. And for the last 10 years, I've been the face. I'm the founder, I'm the face, I'm the guy that runs around and shoots the guns, goes and trains people, I go to events, I do, you know, podcast interviews and stuff. And there's a lot of pros that come with that, and there's a lot of cons. There's a lot of people that are constantly looking at your life through a microscope, doxing where you live, making up stories about you. I've had character assassination attempts with videos, with faked text messages all blurred out and just weird stuff. So early on, what was hard for me was realizing that the firearms community is not all conservative. They're not all Christian. They're not all Republican. They're not all pro 2A even. There are people in it just for the money, just for the business aspect, or they don't know. They don't have principles. They don't know what they are. They haven't sat down and actually thought about what lines in the sand they're willing to draw, what convictions they actually have. And whenever push came to shove with our company, because we are very principle-based, we have convictions, I'll draw a line in the sand quicker than, well, probably anyone I know. I'll just immediately, hey, I'm over here. Where are you at? And I realized early on that a lot of companies were not on the same trajectory as our company. And there was a lot of clashing with other companies, other influencers, other individuals. And I'm young, you know, at the time, I think I was 24, 25, and this really started happening. And that was very hard for me, but the success was also happening underneath. So I had the fame of people telling me, you know, that I'm the greatest thing ever, I'm the best representative, I'm the, you know, whatever it happens to be. And so you're having to manage that very high amount of praise with also a very high amount of criticism. And it's taken me years to figure out how to, you know, handle it, not get too cynical, because that is something that happens to a lot of people who get a lot of praise. Eventually, it doesn't mean anything to them. Or being too overly defensive with the people who are criticizing them, who maybe it is constructive criticism, and you have to look at that. So, and I'm still figuring it out. I don't have it all figured out. But in the last 10 years, what I have seen is a number of content creators who've gone through some of the same, they've had some of the same experiences that I've had. And this is probably the best advice I'll give this entire show. The most important thing you can do is watch other people in your same space and look for the ones who are making bad mistakes or the ones who crash and burn. Analyze why they crashed and burned, and then do the opposite. And that is essentially what I did for years, is I would see a content creator get famous. It got to their head. They started taking advantage of people or misusing their fame. And I would look at that and go, yeah, I'm not doing any of those things over there because it didn't work for him. And then I would move over, and then another person would start doing something bad. And that was very helpful for me, was able to being able to see some content creators or some people starting to get some fame in our space go through that at the same time as me and crash and burn, because they didn't have conviction, they didn't have values, they made poor business decisions and who they aligned with, or some of their content was just really trashy. And I was able to see that happen and steer away from it. I wasn't going that direction anyway, but it helped kind of validate, hey, the direction we're going is the right direction. This will keep us, you know, to a very high level as far as, you know, trustworthiness of a brand or myself as a person. So I know it's kind of a rabbit trail, but probably the most difficult thing for me, and it is a full-time job. I don't think people realize that. Like, being a public-facing, you know, person who's in the public eye, thanks to the internet, and having to manage these stressors, both the good and the bad coming in, is a full-time job to keep you from crumbling, which we've all seen celebrities do. We've all seen celebrities crumble and change their personality because it gets to their head or whatever. And I think I've stayed pretty consistent to where I, besides maturing, I've stayed very consistent to who I am. I don't think I'm God's gift to the gun industry or whatever, like some people think. But it is a full-time job to stay very balanced at being able to handle all the positivity that you should get, and also be able to handle all the criticism that's coming in. And that's, I could give whole lectures on that probably, because there's a lot of stuff to unpack there, but it's very difficult nowadays.
Some of that grounding, I'm speculating here, you correct me, probably comes from, when did you get married and taking on the responsibility of a wife and kids? That probably helps keep you grounded 100%. In reality.
Yes. So that was only 2.5 years ago that I got married. So it was actually later in the process. Now, it has helped a lot with some of the larger, bigger, more challenging things that have happened recently. But I was having to go through all that single, in my own house by myself, which made it even worse. I didn't necessarily have a lot of, you know, really close friends or a wife to support me. I highly recommend, get married to a good woman who could support you in things like this. But I also definitely was not ready to get married back then. I'm glad I didn't try to get married when I was 25. I had a lot of maturing to do. But yes, being married now definitely helps with all sorts of stuff that happens on the internet.
So go back to, like, when you're starting out, were you purposeful in terms of, like, these, particularly the initial ground floor people that you partnered with, were you purposeful in, like, they got to match my values? We got to be on the same page value-wise. How important was that?
It was very important, I will say, and this is something that a lot of people don't understand. There are a lot of large companies out there that start not with their full evolved mission and vision at the beginning. Like, because usually you don't know. I mean, there's some large companies, like I think Microsoft was one of those. There's a few companies that started because the guy wanted to sell a thing. And then as time went on, the mission evolved and the ideas evolved. So for me, I didn't have a huge, like, grand vision for what T-Rex should be when I started. It did have to evolve for a few years. And what was fortunate is the guys that I partnered with early on, for the most part, are on mission with where the company's going. Now, we all have different sort of ways of perceiving how it should be done, but we are aligned in the Christian values that are in the business, the kind of hiring that we want to do, where the company is going. We still want to grow the company. Like, we are all on mission with things like that. Now, I have had team members in the company that we hired early on who I thought at the time we're on mission, and at the time they probably were on mission, but then as we developed and we evolved it and we got stronger and our mission got way more clarified, they then did not align as much with it and they needed to move on. So that is something that happens, and our mission is still, I would say, little tweaks, you know, here and there. There's not going to be a giant, you know, fork in the road that's going to take us away or something. But there are little tweaks here and there that make people in the company uncomfortable, or have made people uncomfortable in the past, that has made people leave. And that is not always a bad thing. That can be a good thing. Hey, we're going this direction. If this isn't comfortable for you, maybe find somewhere else that's a more enjoyable place to work and go there and work with that company on their mission if it's more aligned with you. That's something I tell people at work all the time. Hey, if you ever need to go to another company to be fulfilled and happy, I'll be happy for you. Like, you should go. I'll even call them and do a reference if need be. Like, go somewhere that makes you happy. It may not be T-Rex. It may be somewhere else. And but a lot of that mission had to evolve later, as the company went on and as I grew in maturity, as we saw how much influence we had in the firearm space, because it was, when it started, it was just holsters. And now it's political involvement. It's outfitting people with, you know, certain types of equipment that originally I did not plan on ever being able to sell, like body armor. And our mission is just much more defined than it was at the very beginning. And that's a lot of companies these days.
I have no idea how this question will land, or I haven't thought it through, but if I compare T-Rex Arms to Chick-fil-A, mm-hmm. is that a compliment? Is that something you are, or is...
I'm going to say something spicy.
Yeah.
So I love Chick-fil-A.
Yep.
I would actually say our company is more... It very good comparison, I would say. And Chick-fil-A has done a very good job at becoming a large corporation, billion-dollar company, multi-billion-dollar company, while still maintaining Christian values, still maintaining their core of what a lot of people understand about Chick-fil-A. I have started to see some of the corporations start to waver from outside political pressure or even internal pressure. And I would say that our company, my intent and goal with our company is it doesn't matter how big we get, we are standing very firm in our conviction. I would like to stand firmer in our conviction than someone like Chick-fil-A and not change no matter how large the company gets. But I would say, yes, the example of Chick-fil-A and T-Rex is very similar. Christian companies, we have very similar values. They have no problem making a lot of money, getting stores in a lot of places, reaching as many people as possible. Same with T-Rex Arms. In the last couple of years, though, just like with a lot of corporations, I've seen some stuff with Chick-fil-A that I'm like, oh, man, I wish... Either they were more upfront about their mission and their values, and they push back against some of the woke stuff more than they do already. But I'm learning from this. I'm seeing how they're reacting to it and going, well, how can T-Rex Arms do it better than Chick-fil-A if we do become a billion-dollar company someday or a $200, $300 million company? Because we're not there yet. But I would say it is a pretty good comparison. Chick-fil-A is similar to ours as far as values. I would just like us to be even firmer than a company like theirs. And they have been very firm the last decade with culture.
What is next for T-Rex Arms? What do you see happening over the next 5 years or so?
So the big one, I recently had a candidate come in who's interested in working for us, and she asked the same question. She said, where do you, you know, the next 3 years, where do you see yourself? I see T-Rex Arms, and my hope is that T-Rex Arms can really become the, what's a good way to put it? Basically, I'm just going to flub through it, but this is just how I see it. It's going to become the beacon of hope and communication inside of the firearms industry, to the point of starting to go outside of the firearms industry to Americans in general, the mainstream, I don't want to say mainstream Americans, but non-gun industry Americans. And I say that because in the firearms industry, you have lots of content creators. You have lots of companies who never say anything publicly. Most firearms companies never make public statements. They don't have spokespeople. They don't have representatives. And that's something that I've never liked as a consumer, because I do buy a lot of product and shop around at different companies. So we're trying to make T-Rex Arms into a company that is always accessible to the people, because our objective is to arm and prepare as many people as possible, while also being the spokesperson. That is unapologetic about the values of America, the values of the Second Amendment, and we do that as a company. And we are the company. I mean, you think of the firearms industry, and it's, well, what's T-Rex Arms say about that? What are their people saying about this political bill coming out, or this, you know, woke thing that's going on, or this gun company that's now starting to go woke, who's introducing DEI? What does T-Rex Arms say about that? Why is that potentially a problem? And we're the company that everyone turns to get that information, because we're one of the few who's willing to say it. We're one of the few that's willing to not be monetized on YouTube. None of our videos are monetized. I don't sell out to other companies. I don't have sponsorships. I want to be able to say whatever I want, whenever I need to, without, you know, fear of, you know, losing a bunch of money or whatever. And so far we've been able to do that as a company, which is why I think we are situated to be able to become that spokesperson for the firearms community and even start to go outside of the firearms community to Americans in general. So my hope for the next 5 years, 3 years, 10 years even, is we keep developing that where people can go to us for that information and we can give that information to Americans, because in my opinion, they're not getting enough unapologetic, principled conviction out of conservative Americans.
And it seems like that's even more important because hasn't the NRA been weakened and perhaps bankrupted? Mm-hmm. And so that
poorly bankrupted. Yeah.
Oh, you think even more?
100%. Oh, the NRA has not been pro 2A in probably about 80 years. 100%. Oh, yeah.
Unpack that for me. The NRA has not been pro 2A for how long, you just said?
Probably about 80 years or longer. So the NRA, this is why this is so important to us at T-Rex Arms. The NRA, the National Rifle Association, for the last, and there's a bunch of lawsuits going on, but for the last, say, I would say 30 years, 20 years or so, they have become a more or less a for-profit balloon-sized organization that relies on people donating money, a lot of money, it was like 300 something million 1 year, in order to keep their massive corporation going. They don't necessarily fight for a ton of laws, because ultimately their business model, this is the problem with rights organizations. The business model of a rights organization, if you get it too big, is, well, if we fight for all the rights and we win them back, we'll go out of business.
Yeah.
Because no one will fund us anymore. Yeah. So you have to maintain this nice push and pull of, there's just enough fear-mongering, which there's plenty of with NRA newsletters and emails, that people will still give us money, because those are the customers, and we'll fight some bills here and there so that there's still some trust in us. But the last decade, that trust in more serious gun owners has been waning. They've been dropping subscribers even before Wayne LaPierre started getting investigated, because we started to look and go, wait a minute, they're not fighting all these bills, but they still want all of our money. And it all comes down to return on investment. If the American people want to give this organization $300 million to only win a couple bills a year, not a great ROI. We went out as a company, as T-Rex Arms, and we worked with some people in Nashville. We were able to kill an 80-year-old ammo tax in, I think it was 2018, using, I think we spent about $10,000, $11,000 paying for a few things, and then worked with the legislators there. And we were able to kill an ammo tax bill that our state has had for 80 years. So that's why gun owners in general don't trust the NRA, because the return on investment is so bad for the amount of money we're spending for not a lot. So the NRA is a very antiquified rights organization. And in my opinion, and this is my spicy opinion, any rights organization, a nonprofit, you know, rights organization of some sort, needs to have their strategy be, we're going to fight for the rights so hard that we can go out of business. We don't have to be around anymore. We can keep two people on staff to have our systems ready to get switched back on if we need to, but we're happy to put ourselves out of business because our goal is so great that it exceeds our salaries, our paychecks, our lavish dinners, our expensive suits, our expensive houses, because we're a rights organization fighting for the people, not just for ourselves. And I am still looking for organizations with that goal in mind, and, well, I'm still looking.
That's great stuff. Take the whole, this is why it started out lesbian and gays.
Right.
And the next thing is bisexual. And then, oh, now we got to fight for the transgenders and blah. And it's just, next, again, they'll be fighting for pedophiles very soon, if they're already are. And because, again, it's like, okay, well, hold on. You can't bully gay people anymore. We've won that fight. They get to marry. We won. Mm-hmm. Oh, so now we have to move on to the next. And wow, it's a great point you're making about the NRA. I did want you to make the one final point about why you can, your commitment to your values and why you can continue to say what you say. You told me when I visited you guys, it's one of the reasons you won't take government contracts, because they, next thing you know, they're telling you who to hire, what quotas you got to meet and all that. Explain that.
Yeah, so in the firearms industry, and this is more in the defense. So people need to understand there's the firearms industry, which is a few billion dollars of ish of like full market saturation of market cap. And then you have the defense industry. That's where we have Lockheed Martin, Boeing, we have aircraft, satellites, stuff, and that's, we're talking trillions of money over here in the defense industry. When you start getting into defense contracts, there are a lot of them that have DEI requirements, and they have various political requirements involved, and they send staff to hang out at your facility and basically monitor and audit your company. So whatever politics is happening in the Pentagon, whatever politics is happening in the DOD, start to transfer over into private businesses. Now, in the firearms industry, thankfully, that has not started happening as much as the defense industry, but it is starting to occur in some places, and I've heard it starting to occur. So one reason that our company does not go out and seek government contracts, it's really two reasons. One, I don't want to open up any exposure to DEI or other woke political stuff that could occur through that, but also I don't want to rely on a customer base that is unreliable. Because the government is very good at pulling out of contracts after you have spun up all your production, all your manpower, in order to handle a $10 million or even a $5 million contract, something small. I've seen this crush multiple companies in the gun industry. And so for us, it's a pragmatic approach of how we do business, how we serve customers, but it's also that I don't really want to be beholden to this customer entity that could actually shove some stuff down our throat or attempt to shove some stuff down our throat. And then we have to say, no, we're not doing that, and then immediately lay off 30 people because now we just lost $5 million in revenue. So for us, we're being very proactive in resisting, or not really resisting that, but not looking for it, because we haven't had giant contracts come in that we've turned down, but we also haven't hired people to go to military bases and try to get contracts, which a lot of companies do. So for us, we're focused on the American people. If there are some guys at a military unit that want to order 50 items, 100 items, and that does happen, we sell to them. Very simple, very easy. There's no expectations on us besides just getting them the product. So we're not having to compromise our values, and we can continue doing business. But I am afraid that in the next 4, even 8 years, we will start to see some of the gun industry contracts through the government starting to require more of this woke stuff like they're requiring for some of the larger defense contracts. And then large companies like SIG, large companies like Glock, although a lot of them are foreign, are gonna have to make the decision, do we introduce all this wokeism into our company and into our company culture to keep this $100 million contract, or do we tell them to pound sand? And right now, I think a lot of companies are just gonna go with the politically correct direction that there is going to be pushed on them. And that's very sad to me, because we should have firearms companies who are willing to say, no, we're not doing that. We make product, we make good product, and we also support the Second Amendment. And some of these things do not align when you start giving this to us while we're trying to do this thing over here, and they actually resist it. And we'll see if that happens. But
I hate to do this, but because I feel like I'm cutting this conversation so short, because I'm telling you, I could talk to Lucas all day. His business is fascinating. What he stands for is fascinating. This is why you need to be signing up to come to Roll Call 2.0. We're going to have an entrepreneurial panel. Lucas is one of these young entrepreneurs we need to be praying for, and we can learn so much from. Just think about what we just unpacked in this 30 some odd minutes in terms of Lucas's parents shot several arrows with their kids into the world. And they have this young son, Lucas, who at 19, 20 years old starts a business that making holsters, selling it over eBay. And the next thing you know, he's employing 100 people. And he's created a work environment where you can be a Christian. And just think about all your kids and young people that are going off into the corporate workspace, and they have to conceal the things you taught them as a kid, the things you taught them in the church. They have to hide it. They don't have to hide it if we build our own businesses, if we instill in these young arrows that you guys are having with your kids, and we shoot them into the world, and we put the right values in them. They too can. This man grew up poor, took $1,000, and is now employing 100 people, has facilities. I'm not going to get all off into his business, but the man's making a lot of money, and he's going to be making a lot more and employing a lot more people and standing for values that allow us to continue to enjoy freedom. Guys, FearlessArmyRollCall.com. You don't want to miss our conversation about entrepreneurship and how important it is, and that you don't have to send your kids off to one of these indoctrination camps called colleges and let them build up a bunch of debt. You just need to put the right values in your kids, send them off into the world, and God will take care of the rest. Thank you so much for joining us for this conversation. We'll see you next time.
Waiting for the countdown, coming off the breakdown, standing in line for freedom. Looking for a breakout, feeling like a standoff, nothing in life like freedom. Came like a fighter, striking like a ladder, making all this moves for freedom. I want freedom. No negotiation, my sister, no relation. We all just wanna have freedom. Sitting on a corner, never been alone. I'm breaking my back for freedom. Bless, we are living, get back, we are.